This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of July 1st. I'm John Gibson. With me early on a Sunday morning is my buddy Jim Allen. How you doing, bud?
It's early. And so, yeah, but I'm here, so I'm good.
I have no comment. I don't know if I'm good or not. Still got the scratchy voice, still have the cough, but still pushing on because I love baseball.
Oh, well, that's dedication. Why?
That's dedication, Holmes. And I can see how impressed you are because your video is off. So to me, you look really, really impressed.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's, I have that button on my Zoom. It says, look impressed.
A gym emoji. I got you. Yeah,
exactly.
All right, guys. On this week's show, we've got Yomiuri Giants roving assistant coach Zealous Wheeler. We talk about the races. We've got our Power Track segment. And we got a special guest who actually initiated that Power Track segment long ago. Hint, hint. And we're going to look at a trade and talk about some numbers and touch on rookie rumors. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
So I ventured out to Tokyo Dome about 10 days ago, and I had the pleasure of speaking to Zealous Wheeler, the former Rakuten and Yomiuri Power Pack, who's now coaching both on the top team and he's coaching the farm team at times for the Giants. And what a person. I mean, he's just energetic, except when you try to talk to him and do an interview. But he's so energetic. He's so positive. I got to Tokyo Dome about, I'm not sure, I think it was 1:15, and I wasn't sure, because I actually planned this whole day out. I took the family out to lunch at Tokyo Dome, and I said, okay, I'm going to go to the Dome and do an interview, and then I'll meet you guys back at home. And so I was there really early. The kids ate fast, and it was a little bit after 1 o'clock, and I didn't actually know what time you could get into the Dome, right, as a reporter.
Right, so because teams have limits now.
Yes.
You know, it's like you used to be able to just show up first thing in the morning, mm-hmm, or whatever. And now it's like Chiba and Seibu, they can't keep you waiting because there's too many ways to get into the ballpark. But but Chiba, they'll sit, have a seat. We'll call you when we're ready for you. We'll call you when we're ready to disrespect you.
Right. So, and this was a night game, and it was 1:15, but I found out that the Dome opens to reporters at 1 o'clock. And so I just walked right through, mm-hmm, and I went down onto the field and waited for Zealous. And he happened to be there that day because sometimes he's with the minor league team, so he's not there. And before the game, I said, hey, man, you got 5 minutes for me? And he said, sure. So we did it right before they even started practice. So this was the earliest interview I had ever done. And he's such a no-nonsense guy, straightforward approach to life. I usually complain about Giants players and coaches offering just really sanitized comments, but Z is a man of few words anyway, so it's going to come out a little bit opaque and maybe not as clear in terms of getting right to the point, and he's going to talk around things instead of addressing things directly. But I hit him with some follow-ups in this talk, and he stretched things out to almost 7 minutes, and he really gave us a lot of things to chew on here. So let's take a listen to Zealous Wheeler.
We're here with Zealous Wheeler at Tokyo Dome, coach of the Giants. Thank you for taking some time with us.
Uh-huh. Nice to see you again, man.
Yeah, good to see you always. How has this season been so far for the Giants? You tell me.
It's a normal baseball season, man. You got your ups and downs. You have your ups and downs like every other team does, but right now we're fighting a state to find our identity, looks like. But, you know, we're getting there, and, you know, time will tell.
Now, what kind of identity do you see for this team? Is it a, you know, scrappy team that just gets runs? Are you guys going to be?
It's both. It's both. You know, it's hard to find right now, but, you know, once we find it, I think we'll take off.
All right. Now, there are so many young players on this team, and they've been, you know, Abe, the new manager, has been bringing up guys and sticking them in and bringing up some older guys and sticking them in. What is that like when you have so much transition going on?
Right, it's tough. It's tough for the players to settle in, you know, but, you know, that's what the manager does, so the guys got to suck it up and just play baseball. But, you know, you're looking for a spark plug, any kind of player. So once we find that spark, you'll be fine.
Now, how do you handle those issues with young players? Because they're not used to, you know, they're used to doing things the way they're used to doing things, and then all of a sudden it's all different. How do you handle that?
Well, it's a growing mechanism, you know. They have to grow. It's just like in life, you have to grow quick. So once they grow and get confidence in themselves, they'll be fine. Sky's the limit. But they need the confidence first.
How do they get that?
Just being positive. Just being positive. Come here like they're doing now, hitting work, hitting early, and do the best they can do.
Well, I'm sure being around you gives them some positivity.
A little bit, man, but it's been hard. You know, but these players got to control what they can control, and that's their play. That's all you can ask. You got to control what you can control, and the rest takes off.
Now, runs are down, and people are talking about the ball being blamed and all this stuff. What have you seen?
Ah, man, just talk. You know, just something to talk about. Baseball is baseball. You got the power, you're going to hit it out. And the runs down, and just it is. Pitches are good. Tip your hat.
Especially in the Central League, I was just talking to a guy. I said, look, the Dragons don't have a great record, but they have really good pitching. The Tigers have really good pitching. The Carp have really good pitching.
Exactly. It's just, you know, what you're supposed to do. Everybody can't hit like Barry Bonds, you know. So, you know, the guys are doing the best they can, man. You know, you just have to be positive and just hang with them every day.
Now, I say in that kind of environment, all the little details, the finer points of the game kind of stand out more.
Oh, of course. You know, when you don't execute, things happen like that. You get exposed. So right now, we're exposed a little bit, but you know, just keep trucking, keep plugging. And you never know. In September, we might be the champs.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about the fact that during Interleague, you guys were on top of the standings, the Carp were on top of the standings, and the Tigers were on top of the standings. And it just changes like every day or every couple of days, depending on who wins and who loses.
Right, because the league is so tight, and so you never know right now. But, you know, people like to say what they say, but, you know, day in, day out, you got to do what you got to do.
Now, Okamoto, he's a perennial MVP candidate. What areas do you work on with him to improve?
Oh, nothing hitting. Nothing hitting. You know, he can hit with the best of them. You know, he just got to be ready to perform every day. Like I said, control what you can control. That's in between the lines when the game starts. Everything else means nothing.
Agreed. Is that meaning some of the mental stuff, too, and some of the preparation?
Of course. Everybody has mental problems in this game. You know, like they say, 90% mental, 10% physical. Everybody can play. And just, you got to be strong mentally, man. You know, I don't think people understand how hard it is to play. And practice and play every single day. Travel every 3 days. It's hard.
That's what I talk about, especially remember Tanishige?
Uh-huh.
Playing for 20 years and being the catcher and having to prep all that time.
Yeah. That's a mental stress. A long.
I can't even believe, you know, if people knew how much went into just one game.
Exactly.
They wouldn't be screaming at the TV
exactly.
So much.
We play 143 plus spring training.
Mm.
So
plus, you know, postseason if you get in there, which are harder games.
Yeah.
Now, how is it going with your coaching now? How has this transition been for you?
Not bad. You know, it still feel like a play, really. You know, because...
You said that last year.
Yeah, because, you know, the guy's success is my success, you know. When they hit, it feel like I hit.
Mm.
When they don't, it feel like I don't. You know, so that's part of coaching.
How's it going without an interpreter?
It's fine, man. I've been doing that for the past, 6-7 years here, no interpreter really. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're around. I really don't need.
What are some of the things you work on with some of the players? You don't have to mention who.
Just approach, man. I'm working on their approach. You know, counts, when to hit the ball, when you're ready to swing, your strength. I mean, you can't cover the whole zone. You got to hit your strengths.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you said, young guys are young. They'll get to it soon.
What about, last question, what about the work you do with some of the minor leagues? I know you go up and down
sometimes you're here
at the dome, and sometimes you're not, because I came looking for you one day. I'm like, where is he?
Hey, just approach, man. Same, you know, mentally.
Same with the young kids?
It's all approach. You know, if you approach correctly, you're going to hit the ball. But you up there just swinging and, you know, trying to hit it 500 foot, you know, it ain't gonna work.
Well, I said last question, but when now that you say that, when you see some of the young kids come up here and changing what they've been doing on the minors, how do you deal with that situation?
Most of that is experience, you know, they're nervous, you know. Once you get here, you know, you play minor league, 200 fans, not even that.
Mm.
Then you get
friends
here,
and
you
family, play, baby, friends
yeah,
and family.
Yeah, then you get here, you play 55,000. You know, what you expect the young guy to do?
Mm.
You're going to be nervous. So once he get over that, Once these players get over there, they'll be fine.
All right. All right.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate your time, man. All right.
All right. So, like I said, we all know Z isn't a huge talker, but I thought he had a lot to say. What stuck with you after you listened to this?
Well, you know, I'm watching the Giants, and it's, of course, I listened to Zealous, and it was really brought me back where, you know, he's the glass is half empty and half full at the same time. You just can't. He's really hard to pin down on. You know,
I like that.
No, I mean, he'd be going like, well, if you look at it this way, it's half full, but I'd like to think it's half empty. But then on the other hand, it's also half full.
But anyway, at least it's got some stuff in there. Yeah,
it's got some stuff in it, and you can work with that. Okay, so no, I love him, and I haven't had a chance to have any kind of chats. I've seen him across the field. We waved a few times, and that's been it.
Yeah, if you don't call him over, he will not just come over and say,
well, I call, yeah, I do. And he's like, you know, well, that was the thing. Now you can actually go a little closer at Tokyo Dome, which is a thing. And you didn't used to be able to do that. You had to be from a distance. So anyway, so I like that. And I guess my focus was all this stuff's going on, you know, John saying this is going on and that's going on. You're going, you know, the ball, and there's the manager, and there's the season, and all these things going on. And he's like going, yeah, but we can't deal with none of that. All we can deal is what we deal with.
Right.
So do your work. do your work and don't complain. and you know, and absolutely right. You know, the situation is what it is. You can't change what. Yeah, well, I thought his attitude, but I think that's his attitude. The stuff about the ball was definitely, I think, more of a I can't do nothing about it. So why waste a second thinking about it?
Well, I that's where I think the sanitized comment comes in the straightforwardness. Look, they're not going to tell us what they're doing to counteract what's going on with the ball. They're just not.
Right.
And so I think that's what the answer is going to be for everybody. You just got to hit it. You got to hit it harder, or you have to hit it where they're, you know, the guy, I mean, you know, they're just going to come up with something. So they're not going
to. You got to try a slightly different approach. And I think that's where we got to that, which was you've got to work on your approach. You know, you've got to know what you're trying to do. And I think that's certainly the thing. Certainly that was the message I heard about manager Abe was guys who have that option, guys who have more than, you know, one option, veterans, good hitters, you need to know certain pitches you were driving, then you were trying to hit, put in the seats. Those are ones you're not going to be trying to put in the seats anymore.
Right.
So, you know, you basically need a plan B on a lot of things that used to be this way and they're not that way no more, or at least they haven't been. We don't know going forward what's going to happen. So,
yeah, I was surprised. He had something to say about every question, and that's not always the case with Z.
True.
Yeah, I avoid yes no questions with him in general because you might get the one word answer, and then he will say, "Okay, we done." And then, and I usually prepare the questions. Everyone knows I prepare the questions before I go out. I only had 8. And I threw some follow-ups in there. I think I went over the 10 question mark. And to get him to go for almost 7 minutes without me talking too much, I thought he even expounded on some of the questions. And every word he dropped just seemed like it was almost every word he dropped. It seemed like it was fire and knowledge, except for the, you know, nothing to do when it comes to coaching Kazuma Okamoto. I don't go for that for a second because his numbers have been dropping month by month, except for his RBIs. I think the home runs are pretty similar, but the average is down, and he's getting fewer and fewer hits. But anyway, there was so much good stuff from him. I don't know how much he helps as a coach in terms of what he's doing, especially if he doesn't have the interpreter there. But I think it's mostly, hey, look, you know, your arm's dropping here, and guys can understand simple things, and he can also gesture. So I believe him when he says, you know, I haven't had to really rely on an interpreter to do anything in particular. And again, he's that guy who is going to be attitude. A lot of it is going to be the attitude. Well, you know, it's hot. So what? There's a really good pitcher on the mound today. So what? There's going to be one tomorrow too. Get in there and hit. You know, I mean, the more excuses that you make, the faster you'll be out of the game and or back to the minors. So get out there and get the job done and make the adjustments and learn how to do it. The more you complain, the more time you're wasting. So, you know, I love what he said about when the players hit, he feels like he's getting a hit. And when they don't, he reacts to that emotionally, because that's the guy he was as a player.
Sure.
And, these coaches get blamed when a runner or the third base coach will get blamed if a runner gets thrown out at the plate and he shouldn't have, you know, by 10 steps or so, and he shouldn't have waved him in. Other than that, we don't really know what these assistant coaches do. We get a lot of the reports on the radio. If you watch TV and listen to the radio game on the games on the radio, they're always constantly giving you information. We talked to pitching coach so-and-so about this. We talked to hitting coach so-and-so about that and the other, but we really don't know how much these guys are contributing. We can't really see it, but I can tell you this, a lot of the players the Giants have put out there this year have seemed to be doing those little things, and they don't seem to be making boneheaded mistakes or, you know, goofy running plays and all those kinds of things. They do seem to be focused. Now, I'm not going to attribute that necessarily to Z, but you have a new manager as well, and you have some new coaching staff, but it just, you know, these guys are contributing. Even the young guys, he said, they're just nervous. And I always joke, you know, sometimes on the farm, you're playing in front of family and friends and absolute diehards only. So there's not a lot of fans out there. And you come and, like Z said, 55,000 screaming people, bands playing, everything in unison and a lot of pressure. And then the talent is much higher. So you've got to concentrate a little bit more, if that's possible, you know, the 110% you got to give, right? You got to get that extra 10% from somewhere. But you don't see the Giants guys throwing to the wrong base or trying to take an extra base on the strongest arm in the outfield, or, you know, they don't miss signs, it seems. So I think they're doing better in terms of getting their young players, their heads in the game. And I think Z has something to do with that, if I do say so myself.
Well, it does help that he's, you know, with the farm guys. And since the Giants, since Abe has been utilizing his farm depth, you know, that he's there and he knows them from there and he knows them up here, and they see a friendly face and I think that helps. And yes. I also think that, I tend to agree with you that the weird stuff has been lacking a little bit. We saw that, I think, the last couple of years with the Giants, the kind of silliness, you know, sort of like, you know, I might as well try it because nobody else seems to care. At least nobody seems to have a plan.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's a plan here. That seems to be the principal criticism of everybody. And I, of course, I love when former Abe was getting ripped a new one by a former manager who was a really terrible manager.
Mm-hmm.
I love him personally. I think he's a great guy. Haruki Ihara, who lucked into a tremendous winning season with the Cebu Lions and then basically was a disaster every other time he tried to manage. And I mean, he did a few, you know, as people do. That's harsh. He had good points and bad points, but him expounding on what managers need to do when his last managing plan was everybody wear high socks and no facial hair,
yeah.
You know, was, I thought, a little weird. You know, it was like, well, they're going to pay me to spit on people. That's all I heard.
Gotta fling those things. Yeah, I understand.
So.
Yeah, well, it was an awesome chat with Z, and I listened to it three times because he wowed me with his responses. I said, a lot of sanitized comments come from Giants land, and I think we got a little bit more than that this time from a guy who is probably, I mean, let's face it, he's not a big interview anyway, but I think nobody talks to him. I think he's not talked to a lot and hasn't done a lot of interviews this year or this past year as well. This is his second year doing this. So I think he was glad to talk to us. I think he was happy.
That's the thing for coaches in general.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the only time anybody ever talks to the coaches is after the game when they want to find out what went wrong or what went right.
Why did you send that runner?
Well, not necessarily, but what did you think about his approach and what did you think about, you know, his tempo or his rhythm or whatever? But I've always found coaches to be very talkative before the game. And I was very upset about a month ago when a Hawks coach was waving at me. Mm-hmm. And for the life of me, I couldn't figure out who it was. And so, I looked at my team roster.
Yeah.
And I'm going, wow, it's Hiroshi Narahara, who I used to chat with all the time when he was with when he'd left the Cebu Lions for the Nippon Ham Fighters and then went on to the Chunichi Dragons. And I hadn't talked to him probably 15, 18 years.
Wow.
So that was wild. But the coaches always impress me with how knowledgeable they are and how willing they are to talk.
All right. So at this time, I would like to bring in Patrick Newman. Patrick, a long time ago, I don't remember the years, Patrick, maybe you do, started our power ranking segment called Power Tracks back in the day. So some of the older listeners might remember. Good morning, Patrick, and welcome on.
Hey, thank you for having me. And yes, I was actually going to ask you, when was the last time we did the Power Tracks? It's been quite some time. So yeah, it's great to be back.
Well, I think we can do the math. I think your son was 3 years old at the time. So if he's 15, that would be 12 years ago. So
yeah. That sounds like a long time.
Sounds like too much math.
Yeah, that sounds like longer than it's been, but it sounds like it could be right. Yeah.
So how have you been, and have you been staying up with MPB since the family multiplied on you there?
Well, yeah, the family increased back in 2012, and the career kind of took off, the day job, so kind of took over things. Yeah, so do I keep in touch with baseball and MPB? Yes, but not to the extent that I used to. I was fairly obsessive, and I would say until the birth of my daughter in 2012. And I was writing almost every day between 2008 and 2011, I think. So this is going back quite a bit.
Many of you might remember Patrick as the MPP tracker on Twitter/X. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I was, I've removed that. I still have the website mpbtracker.com, but I don't think I've written anything there since 2017. So it's quite dormant, but I keep paying the bill for it every year.
Well, that's good. It's always good to waste money and have your wife get angry at you.
No, she doesn't mind.
And I remember you and I had a discussion about a young player named Shohei Ohtani who was a two-way guy coming up, and we were fighting over who quote-unquote discovered him or loved him first. And did you ever think in your wildest dreams that he would be this kind of hitter slash producer slash contributor in the major leagues the way he has been, winning two MVP honors and on his way to a third right now?
So I'll say this. I went on TV, Japanese TV, in 2014 on a program called Going Sports. And on that program, I called Ohtani the perfect baseball player. And he still has exceeded my expectations. So am I surprised a little bit? I'm more surprised by the home run numbers than anything else.
Yes, that's why. Yeah.
I always looked at him as more of a gap hitter, more of a doubles hitter. Particularly when he was playing for Nippon Ham. The pitching doesn't surprise me. He's been injured a few times, but, when you have 100 miles plus and you're that kind of movement and on the forkball in particular, I knew he would be a dominant pitcher at the major league level. I had no doubt about that. But yeah, the home run numbers surprised me.
Yeah, I just remember that conversation you and I had, and I chuckle about it sometimes. And obviously, we've been doing the Power Track segment. We took over. Jim and I argue about what the approach should be and how to factor things sometimes. But
yeah, well, John likes to say there is one approach, and it's not mine.
So I had a spreadsheet for it, and I had like some math with runs scored and runs allowed, and took into account who they had played in the last what did we do that monthly? I think it was.
Yes, yeah. We did. Yeah, and we so, still do. Yes.
Yeah. So, I looked at the level of competition and that sort of thing. It brings back memories for sure.
Mm. Yeah, I was looking at that last month, and I saw, what really threw both of us off about Rock 10, or at least threw me off, because I weigh heavily on runs scored and allowed, was the two games against SoftBank. Typically, when you allow 43 runs, 43 runs in two games, you get beat 43-5 or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a sign of a bad team.
Yes.
But some yes. days,
usually.
Yeah. Yeah. But there are times when the floor just opens up and it's not indicative of anything else other than the floor opening up on you and everything going wrong. So the Rock 10 then turned things around, and then they just had they went back to normal.
Yeah. So kind of the inspiration for me looking at competition and that sort of thing was, I remember in 2002 or 2003, Hanshin had a good record in both of those years. They won in 2003, and I think they mm-hmm. finished fourth in 2002.
Correct.
But they won something like 21 games against Yokohama,
mm-hmm.
which was a doormat. I think it was 2003. And so they dominated the league, but they really completely owned Yokohama. And then, of course, they got they got blown away in the Nippon Series. So. So you do look at are they running up their stats against bad teams and stuff like that. But in the case of Rakuten, it could just be that the game was out of hand and they sent some sacrificial pitcher out there, one of those.
Sure.
I can do that. I can
sure.
do that.
Yeah. And there's another thing. I know Bill James found this one in the, I think it was 1984, 1985, which year did the Padres go to the World Series? Was it 85? 84.
84 is what I remember, yes.
Okay, 84, and then 85, the explanation for the Padres' nosedive from one of the players was we had a target on our backs, and everybody was out to get us. And so if you looked at so what he did was look at the pitchers who pitched against the Padres in 84 and 85. He found that in 85, they were essentially league normal competition. And in 84, they had basically played against all the worst pitchers in the league.
Which can inflate some numbers a little bit, maybe.
More in the past than it does now.
Yeah, back then there was the weighted schedule where they would have played most of their games against their division opponents. So,
sure.
Yeah, so it can be a little bit skewed. I think in the major league level, it's a lot less skewed now than it was 40 years ago. But yeah, stuff like
don't say 40 years ago, Patrick.
Yeah, right.
29 is what we should.
Well, back in the glorious era of the 80s, of course.
So Patrick is just in Japan traveling, and we got him to pop in and join us for a little segment here, and we certainly appreciate it. It's great to hear your voice. Keep watching. Give us a listen once in a while when you have some time, all right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to be back in touch. And thanks again for having me on. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah.
All right. Mm. I'll leave you guys to it. Great hearing you again, and see you soon.
All right. Here comes the Power Track segment after the man who started Power Tracks. All right. So Power Tracks. So my immediate memories of how June went down were far from the truth. You know my process. We just talked to Patrick, and he talked about spreadsheets and all that. I'm like, spreadsheets? Man, I'm going to spread the wealth. I'm going to look everywhere I can and watch as many games as I can. But a spreadsheet and I guess strength of schedule and all that stuff, I suppose that matters. And I do look at that. But yeah, I mean, it has to play in, because if you're playing a last place team six times in a month and then you go into interleague and you play some of the other teams, I guess that factors in. But anyway. My memories were, of course, Rakuten had won the interleague session. So I thought, okay, Rakuten's got to be up there. SoftBank, obviously up there. But what team is that third team? And for some reason, I thought about the Fighters. So then I went to look at the numbers and was far from the truth. The SoftBank Hawks just killing everything. They're not even leaving enough to identify as roadkill the way they're driving over people.
Yeah, pretty much the manager's families are coming out to identify the bodies.
And the managers, and they're having trouble. They're definitely having trouble. So, SoftBank with 16 wins, 16-5 as we sit here today. One more game left in the month today, and they're playing the Fighters, and that's the closest team to them, and they're leading that team by 11.5 games in the standings. The Hawks are season high 22 games over 500, and that's in part thanks to this 16-5 June so far. So the Rakuten Eagles were 11-9, and the Oryx Buffaloes are 12-10, but that's, you know, so-so. I was surprised to see that DeNA was, with the two wins here so far in this series against the Dragons. They've got 13 wins, as do the Hiroshima Carp. So I'm going to go 1-2, and then with the Rakuten and SoftBank, and then I'm going to say tied for third are the Hawks and the Carp and the DeNA Bay Stars. What about you?
Well, the easy one is the easy one, as you've said, so no need talking about the Hawks. They're so far, the other 11 teams in NPB are, to be honest, not all that different.
Mm.
Because if you compare how different the Hawks are, it's like they are playing in another league.
True.
The way I'm looking at it, and I do the opposite. I watch games.
Wait. You can't do the opposite, because once you look at the numbers, you don't have an opinion anymore, because the numbers tell you what you can't like guess. I mean, you're talking about the opposite of my process, which is try to remember.
Exactly. My attitude is, you know, you look at the big picture and you see what's up, and then you ask yourself, why is that?
Mm, okay. I don't know
so
if that's opposite, but yeah.
I do see, you know, I see players, I see individuals, I see things happening, I see games, and I think I see individual performances, I see individual plays, not as many as you do, because that's humanly impossible.
Thank you for the compliment.
But I do see those, and they do go into my, you know, you can't block them out, but the point is, when you look at the big picture, sometimes things pop up that you didn't see.
Mm-hmm.
And then you ask yourself, why is that? Why is that? Why is that? And then, you know, you look for, you know, for micro, you know, reasons for that, you know, and that's where, you know, who were they playing? You know, that's something I guess I missed a little bit with Rakuten. You know, was it all one game? You know, was it a pattern? I don't know.
Right.
But yeah, we all miss things. There's no, you know, Dole James has a great thing to say about park factors, which mm-hmm. is the more you study it, the more you study park factors, you realize that anybody who says they understand the way to do park factors doesn't know what they're talking about. There are ways to understand it and ways to calculate and to estimate, but every system has its pitfalls, and so it is with our baseball knowledge. Every system that we use to systemize
mm-hmm.
the way players move and play and the results they get and the success they have and the failures that they have. Requires us to stereotype certain things and categorize certain things. And, you know, life is just vastly more complicated. So there's an error in everything. There's always every estimate, every model, that mental model that you make or I make has blind spots. So yeah, we've all got them. Anyway. Yeah, the Hawks are kind of like unmistakable.
Right.
It is like in my memory of watching Kareem Abdul-Jabbar before he was Kareem Abdul-Jabbar on a basketball court, and you'd see nine guys, and then one guy who looked like he descended from the clouds. You know, he was just so different. And so that's how SoftBank is. I think my other team at the top is, it's really hard, but I think I'm going to still lean with Hiroshima over DeNA.
Okay.
But that's that. Yeah, DeNA is a little bit more like the rest of the crowd than Hiroshima has been consistently better. So,
well, yeah, as a baseball fan, I would like to see DeNA finish off that sweep today against the Dragons, just because I think they're a much better team and they probably should. But obviously, I'm torn. The baseball John part of me is torn. But I wanted to go back to SoftBank because we used to brag about this SoftBank organization and laud the players and the talent and say that, I remember you made a comment on the show more than a decade ago that this team could play its second, its farm team and still beat the rest of the league.
Well, beat some of its farm team was competitive with some of the.
Sure.
Some of the other teams in the.
Gotcha. But I mean, and we're 10 years or so down the road, and we're seeing that their players who are coming up, their replacement guys, have produced well on the top teams.
I know.
Since Yugi Yanagita went down.
I know. I'm going, who are these guys?
Yeah. And then here are some of the who are these guys' names. Ryuta Hirose, Hikaru Kawase, who had a hit yesterday and knocked in a run. Tomoya Masaki, guys haven't heard of. Then you got guys like Kenta Imamiya, who, I mean, he did the cockroach on us, right? He was on his back and his legs were kind of wiggling, and then we went over to him, and
I can't unsee that.
Scurried across the floor here because cool. I didn't expect him to be contributing like this, and he had to leave the game. Which one was it, Friday or Saturday? Had some, maybe he was hit by a pitch or something, so they had this.
I think it was yesterday was watching.
Yeah, and so they had to take him out, and I think Kawase was playing, and he's making plays. So, and then we have Hiroya Kurihara, who's having a good season again after blowing out his knee a while back. And then Ukyo Shuto, who, again, pops up when he's most needed. He seems to be the most productive. So, I mean, they're just doing it. You know, they're not missing a beat. They're beating up on guys. Still, I mean, and Kensuke Kondo is just, man Kensuke on fire.
Yeah.
So, what does he have? 13 home runs now, and they're talking triple crown. He's in the running for its official triple crown talk has popped up for him. So, I'm just impressed with the SoftBank Hawks, again, the whole organization.
Right. No, I have to say, yes, I don't have an answer for it other than, and I look at the farm team and I don't really, usually I look at the end of the season and there's always a Hawks guy. There's always a Hawks guy who looks, his numbers look really good.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't say I've been blown away, but when these guys come up and it's like, I didn't see that, I didn't see that. I didn't see this guy.
Oh, and keep this in mind. They lost Shun Mizutani in the active player draft,
correct,
to the Fighters, or he'd be contributing all he's doing for them.
Shun, I think I touched on him last week, and again, this is the second year. I think this is going to be the active player draft is going to be who gets somebody from SoftBank, because last year it was Kotaro Otake, and this time is Shin Mizutani, and every year there's going to be SoftBank. This is like the Hanshin Tigers minor league in 2004. The Hanshin Tigers had this fantastic minor league outfield. It was really a major league outfield. None of the guys were big draft choices, but they had four guys who are quality players: Lin Weiju and Osamu Hamanaka and Gokita and Masato Akamatsu. And they were really good players. And one by one, when they left or they got a job on the farm team, I wanted to go. Gokita told me that when Masato Akamatsu went his free agent compensation, he was so jealous. I wanted to be the one.
Well,
so,
all right.
So that's how the Hawks are. They just got so much talent. You don't know what to do with it.
Yeah. Well, enough about the good teams. We got to talk about the bad. And I was surprised. So at first, my default position is that Chunichi is the worst team I've ever seen. And probably if you do factor in the things that Patrick was talking about, the spreadsheet, and you do runs scored, runs allowed, and all those things, they probably are. But they somehow they managed to win eight games or they have managed to win eight games so far in June. Oh, I'm sorry, nine games, and the Giants have only won eight, and it seems like the Giants have been playing a lot better. So when I went to look up the numbers, I saw that most of the Pacific League, not most, half of the Pacific League is down there. The Cebu Lions obviously struggling to score runs, although they've won two games in a row up in Sendai this weekend. The Fighters, only six games won in June. And then Lotte has only eight wins. So I'm going to go Lions have played the worst. And I don't care what the Dragons' record is because they don't score runs. And like I said, they're not entertaining either. And I don't know how they got nine wins, but I'm putting them at 11 for me. And then my number 10 team would be, I'm going to put Lotte there, even though they've had some success. Mm. They only have eight wins as well, and it seemed like they had pitched well and played well, but they only came. They've so far only come away with eight wins.
I only have two at the bottom because because
they're awful.
because they're bad, and because the other two teams are as close to the the second and third team as they are to the 11th team. So, I had Rockton and Lotte as those guys, one of those candidates to be down towards the bottom for a variety of reasons, but I see them as pretty much there in the middle. I've got basically, as I said, I've got nine. I did have the Hawks at the top, but at the bottom, I can't escape the Cebu Lions, how bad they've been. Chunichi Dragons too. Yeah, those guys are pretty much at the bottom. I have the Lions worse, but the Dragons are not far behind. If I had it, I don't really know after that.
Enough said. It's just really bad stuff going on in those areas. Let's make a seamless transition and talk about some stats. Now, I've been looking at numbers. I've been seeing things, hearing things. And one of the things I heard recently this past week was about the number of shutouts. So, of course, I asked Jim. I said, Jim, what kind of pace are we on in terms of shutouts? And, is there a record, season-long record for, this is what I meant. I don't know exactly how I worded it, but what I was looking for was a season-long record pace for shutouts for NPB total.
Ooh.
So, Let me finish. So that's what I was looking at. And Jim, I was hoping that we'd have a total number and then we could say, okay, there've been 150 shutouts so far. The record for one season is 310 or whatever. And that's not what I got back, but that's okay because I didn't word the question. I don't think it was fair. It was a little bit vague. So, what did you think of the question? And then what did you,
well, basically, not a surprise. I actually could have done really old stuff, but I was at the office and I had what I had, so
it's good.
I basically found that the last couple of years, two things have happened. Shutouts for about the last 10 years were stable at about 8%, basically somewhere between 6 to 8%. Of the games played were shutout victories. Now this eliminates the 0-0 12 inning ties or 9-inning COVID ties.
Okay.
But basically, 6 to 8% of games resulted in shutout victories because that's what NPB records that I had access to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then now for context, when NPB's ball was famously dead in 2011 and 2012, that number was over 10%. And now it's back up over 10% to the ball that hasn't changed. Basically, when we knew the ball was bad, shutouts went up. And now shutouts are going again, but NPB's not saying nothing. Even though people within NPB are talking like wildcats, but
right.
Yeah. But basically shutouts this year are at 13%, which is about almost double the norm.
Right.
Now, historically, I don't know because I didn't look. So, but my guess is what you're seeing now is extreme, even historically speaking, because while the ball was dead for much of NPB history, going back to the 30s and 40s, errors were so plentiful, as we noted, you know, in the bit about the no hitters that aren't no hit shutouts. We used to have those.
Yeah, and I'm like I said, I just noticed a lot of teams getting stoned. I mean, they're just getting stoned, and I don't know. Like for instance, I saw a game, the Kensuke Kondo home run yesterday, the one he hit opposite field. Ever since we've been talking about opposite field home runs, they've been exploding almost. But he had an opposite field home run, I think, at Escona on Friday, and then Neftali Soto for the Moti Marines he's had a couple recently opposite field home runs, and those
Michael Franco had one the other day, and so did Murakami had one yesterday.
Polanco, what's his name? Gregory Polanco for the Marines hit one the opposite field this past week.
Oh right, oh I'm sorry, it wasn't Michael Franco. He was playing in that game. It was Gregory. It was the second of the two home runs that day. Yeah.
So we've been seeing a lot more. And then the game that really, you know, confused me was the Tuesday night game with Hanshin and Chunichi, and Teruaki Sato clubs a ball pull side and it's heading toward right field and it doesn't go out. It actually could have been caught. And then Chunichi Seiya Hosokawa, I think in the next inning, drives the ball the opposite way. So the same direction down the line. Of course, it's down the line, so it's shorter. But he drove the ball and it went out. So it's just confusing, perplexing. I don't know if, you know, we talked about the fact that the balls, you said the balls were going to be restored to their normal condition or.
I don't think they have a way of restoring the balls. They don't do in MLB. They can manipulate the balls because they keep them. All the parks are equipped with humidors now.
Mm-hmm.
So they can manipulate the moisture.
Okay.
Of the balls to make them basically soggier or drier.
Okay.
But the NPB doesn't have that. But I think what they've tried to do is basically start using newly produced balls that had originally been intended to be produced for next year.
And so they're mixing some of those in. So,
yeah, I mean, guess is that they're using them like that. Now, I did one of a colleague of ours said when I said, are they trying to do something, I thought, you know, nefarious, that they're trying to be like MLB and, you know, do the Aaron Judge thing, use lively balls in games
when he's batting.
Not when he's batting, but in games when he's playing and he's chasing a record. I still think they're doing that. But he said, do you think NPB is actually that smart? And I had to agree with her. I had to think, no, probably not. That's probably that was the one missing part of that argument. You have to imagine they have forethought.
Oh my goodness. So I like I said, I mean, Jim sent me, he did the research. He sent me this spreadsheet thing, which at first I couldn't read, and now I can read, but I still don't grasp it. Oh, but you explained it well, that saying that the number of shutouts basically is almost double.
It's basically double, and it tracks almost perfectly with the number of home runs per nine inning.
Okay.
So, basically the frequency of home runs is a huge factor in how many runs are scored, and I think that's really what we're seeing this year. So I think the balls were bad. I think they may be introducing newer balls now, but whether it's systematic or they might be just saying, okay, we've got a batch of them now, let's use them. And then when they use those up, they have to go back to the ones, you know, the ones they had planned for this year.
Yeah.
So.
Well, again, the teams like the Lions and the Dragons really are struggling to score. And I think some of it is ball related, but other parts of it is just not.
Well, talented. Everybody, I think it's all ball. That's not the reason they can't score, because they're all playing with this more or less the same batch of balls, unlike how it used to be. And so every run production is down everywhere.
Yes.
Across the board, you know, I had to.
Except for SoftBank. Yeah.
No, I mean, that's a silly assumption.
No, no, no. It was a joke.
I know. It looks like they're not affected, but I would venture that they are as affected as anybody else.
Right. Yeah. I just teasing that.
Okay.
Because they're scoring runs and they don't seem to be getting shut out, but they're having their struggles as well. All right. Let's make a four seam transition and we'll go rocking with Rogie in a different way. Rogie Sasaki has been rocked with some rumors here. So I saw a couple of YouTube videos that discuss things like Sasaki's arm not being in great condition, combined with his attitude of not wanting to get hurt. Now, I don't know how true this stuff is. I don't know how much is out there, but both videos referenced other pitchers such as Yu Darvish and Masahiro Tanaka not talking about protecting themselves before a possible jump or making a possible jump to major leagues. So this was one issue. And some of the old heads were also grumbling about his attitude. I saw online a story. Apparently he didn't go out to celebrate with the rest of his teammates after a W, after a win, the way that everybody else did. I think it was a walk-off win in one instance. So there's a little bit of smoke around Mr. Sasaki. What have you been reading and hearing?
What I'm reading is bile. You know, basically, all the old boys are really angry that this guy is not breaking his arm to help his team.
Let's give some context here. So, I guess over the past month, right? So he was deactivated, and the reason given was the vague poor upper body condition and poor arm. His arm didn't really respond to
the way he was supposed to. Right. He pitched. He was on the normal seven days rotation.
Mm-hmm.
Since April 23rd, and then on May 24th, he got dropped and he didn't pitch for 15 days.
Mm-hmm.
Because his arm didn't bounce back from his start against the SoftBank Hawks on May 24th. And then he pitched on May 8th. And then a couple of days later, apparently I think they were still doing ultrasounds and blood tests and things a couple of days later. And his body had too much inflammation markers in it. And mm-hmm. So they sent him down. And then he was due to be activated on the 8th. Oh, I don't know. It was about the 20th. Hold on. Last week. 29th, 22nd. He could have been activated on the 22nd. And manager Masato Yoshi said, he'll be back before 2 weeks between starts. But he wouldn't be back in 10 days. Well, it's now been 21 days between starts. We're now at the 3 week level.
Mm.
And no sign of Rogie Sasaki is not scheduled to pitch today. So there may be something there, and I think it has to do with his physical thing. I think everything else, all the stuff about, you know, he's selfish or he's not trying hard enough or the team's babying him, I think that's 100% due to the fact that people are angry that the thinking about baseball has changed. Mm-hmm. To where players' arms need to be protected. When I came to Japan in the 80s and I first started writing about Japanese baseball seriously in the 90s, people mm-hmm. told me, everybody knows that the workloads kill pitchers, but so what? This is Japan. We can't change it.
Mm.
You know, it's just the way it is. And it's the way it is. You know, you're basically, the attitude is, we have to treat pitchers like little kids learning to swim by throwing them in the deep end and letting them figure it out for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Because the best swimmers are the ones who will figure it out naturally. And then we just scrape the bodies off the bottom of the pool.
Yeah. Well, there's one thing. I think they have had the kid gloves on them and they've been handling, or they've had the kid gloves on
this year more than ever.
Yeah, but I think there's also a psychological result of that, which is that, well, then that person comes to expect that kind of treatment. So if they say, hey, you know what, I have this, or hey, you know what, I'm feeling this, and they come to expect time off because of it. You shouldn't be surprised. That's human nature. And I'm just wondering if he does want to make that jump to the majors next year, and he's just slowly, you know, cutting himself away, or cutting, you know, whatever his process is mentally. And that has to be okay. You know,
we have seen that. We have seen that. And I've seen, you know, we were talking about that years ago, players who think, you know, who basically are saying it's their walk year, do different things.
They're all different people. Yes.
Yeah, they do different things. But what I mean is, you see some kind of change in the way in their approaches. Sometimes pitchers will say, you know, this isn't a pitch I think is going to work in MLB, so I'm going to work on a different pitch. We saw that with Yusuke Kikuchi in 2016. He had the best fastball in the Pacific League. In 2017, it's slider, 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 slider. Let me fix that slider. And, you know, it wasn't such a great season. And you've seen it over and over, guys who think, well, there were comments about Norichiko Oki the year before he went to MLB that he was playing not to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So it does do things to people, and but on the other hand, he's also somebody who's at this level and he's a competitor, which is not like most of us.
True.
And, you know, that's that mindset he's also in. So I think we have to include it's hard to say, you know, it's hard to treat him like my disappointment over, you know, not getting to the store on time to get the bread I wanted.
Right.
You know, yeah. I'm like, yeah, okay, fine. I don't have a bunch of people complaining about me. But what I've seen is the comments about Roki Sasaki have been, I think, they're headlines.
Definitely.
And, yeah, there's a headline hunt because, I mentioned this a week or two ago about the story about his being traded. Somebody was saying the chance of a Roki Sasaki trade is not zero. Well, that's, of course, always true. It's never not, you know, it's never zero. But they went on basically to say he's got a he wants to go to MLB and Molte doesn't want to send him, and he can't, you know, but he doesn't really try hard and the team is not pushing him. And it was all about how he's not up to snuff. He's not what everybody thinks he should be. And somehow he should be punished for that. Mm-hmm. And then the last paragraph said, and we had the example of a player who wanted to be posted, but his team refused. So they traded him. And the example they used was Yoshioi Toi, because at the time the leaked explanation was that he wanted to be posted. The real explanation was the fighters didn't want to meet his salary demands.
Yes, and we all saw that in the press conference.
Right. But the story behind that, and so this writer who was saying Roki Sasaki was traded was using an example that wasn't an example.
Apple,
it was just like, somebody wrote it. And then the editor says, this story isn't enough. It needs a snappy headline with no discernible facts behind it.
Hashtag high heat.
So we've seen a lot of that. We've seen little mild comments about Sasaki turned into, you know, molehills comments turned into mountainous headlines.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's just weird. It's just that he's not pitching. So, well, let's write about him. And home runs are down, so let's write about Roki Sasaki not pitching.
Yeah, now he hasn't been maybe as dominant, hasn't taken a huge step forward or anything, but his numbers are among the best in the league, and he's competing well in games, and we can't see everything that's going on, so...
We can see pretty much nothing that's going on.
Yes, so I guess you can speculate if you want to, but I will just choose to watch and see when he comes out and how he reacts when... he's on the mound, because that will tell you more than anything. One note we want to get to, there was a trade this past week.
Oh, yeah, a really interesting trade, actually.
Trade of outfielder Gakuto Wakabayashi from Seibu to the Giants for Seiya Matsubara. Mm. Outfielder for outfielder, Wakabayashi's 26, Matsubara 29. I liked Gakuto Wakabayashi. He was a fourth round pick or the fourth pick for the Lions in the 2020 draft and blew out his knee back in 2021 as a rookie. And at the time, he was leading NPB in steals. And he came back the next season, sort of, but really has never matched that speed and that gap-to-gap power guy. He had a few home runs, too, but he was really a threat as a rookie. Put him on first base. He was going to be on second in a lightning-quick second, but he just hasn't been the same guy. And he had, I think because he doesn't have that speed anymore, he has changed as a batter. Now, for Matsubara, I just thought, well, here's a guy who's stuck among a bunch of outfielders in Giants land who don't really stand out, don't really produce a lot, although he had some moments early on in his career. But why do you say it's so interesting?
It's interesting because Matsubara was a good player in the minors, and he was essentially that player in Japan's majors. They're similar players, except Matsubara has established a higher level. He draws walks and Wakabayashi doesn't. They both have a small amount of pop. They both have good speed. And then Matsubara suddenly rolled off the table. When the Giants got a couple of foreign outfielders a few years ago, they said, like, take a seat. And I'm guessing, and then the guy's a left-handed hitter. And in every way, he's a better player. I mean, he's a better player at approaching 30 than Wakabayashi is. Wakabayashi might be better, but he hasn't done anything to make us think he is. You know, that's my thing. You know,
well, he was on that track.
Yeah, he was a little
until
bit.
He blew out his knee. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. For a very brief time, he was, but he has not established. You know, you look for sort of established levels of performance.
I hear you, because he was on fire, but he blew out his knee on May 30th. That year. It was very early.
But even before that, it was nothing. It was nothing like. He didn't have the sort of, you know, sometimes, you know, the thing about minor league numbers is if somebody does badly, you don't know they're bad until they're bad for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
But when somebody's really good, it kind of, it's, you know, there's something there. He was in that category of guys you wouldn't necessarily expect anything from his minor league career. And then he went up and he more or less did the same thing in the majors. But Matsubara was established. He was one of the Giants' better hitters, better regulars in 2021. And then suddenly, I'm guessing he didn't take his demotion very well, because I think the Giants, and I wrote this the day of the trade, I think the Giants have basically been trying to get rid of him. And it's a trade like the Hirokazu Sawamura trade.
In essence,
they have a guy who actually had some value, but let's just get him off the team as soon as we can. And I my guess is that because they couldn't send him to a penal colony, They picked the next best thing, which was send him to the Cebu Lions.
Oh,
hashtag high heat.
Oh, you're a monster. Well, yeah, he did get his first hit. The other day, I believe it was.
Yeah.
As a Lion.
Yeah, Friday,
so
yeah, Friday he got his first hit. Yesterday scored his first run. We'll see, but he's not, you know, a huge. But they are. I think there's definitely a level between these two guys. But his playing time just went like turn, flip that switch.
All right. So penal colony known as the Sable Lions. Gotcha.
Yeah.
So mean. All right.
Sorry. Lions fans.
Yeah. On that bright and chipper note, we will definitely talk to you next week. We don't have any emails or voice messages from anyone this week, so please get them to us via X or Twitter with the hashtag HighHeat at JBW Podcast. Send questions via email to YAKYUJOHN@gmail.com. You can go to our Facebook page, leave us a message there. and look for us on iTunes. Hopefully we'll have another guest, or maybe Patrick can spare a few minutes again next week and join us for another segment. We'll see. I think he's still going to be in Japan, so we'll see how that works out. All right, so we will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballparks, even if it's Sabre Dome.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag HighHeat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.